Welcome to Hour 2 of today's reading of the Arizona Republic for Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Monday, January 20th. I'm volunteer reader Philip Varellan, reading remotely. We read from arizonacentral.com. We read the electronic edition of the Arizona Republic. And on Mondays, we start with Sunday's death notices. Elsa Benavides, 80, Goodyear, Arizona. Sandra Sandy Berry, 85, Burleson, Texas. Diane Gessner Doyle, 78, Mesa, Arizona. Dorothy Dottie Dudgeon, 76, Fountain Hills, Arizona. Dr. Robert Harvey Foster, 81, Phoenix, Arizona. Mary Monreal Garcia, 87, Phoenix, Arizona. Wayne Gober, Cave Creek. Myrna Harrison, 92, Surprise, Arizona. Marshall Hugh Hemmingson, 80, Scottsdale, Arizona. Margaret Louise Hewitt, 76, Gilbert, Arizona. Benjamin Joseph Jesser, 37, Phoenix, Arizona. Joel Allen Grembowski Johnson, 69, Tucson, Arizona. Gloria F. Jordan, 93, Prescott Valley, Arizona. Dennis Joseph Kane, 83. Marie Bennett Williams Kinnelly, 103, Phoenix, Arizona. William or Bill Kurgis, 62, Phoenix, Arizona. Cyril Kobe, 85, Phoenix, Arizona. Joni Lee, 92, Phoenix, Arizona. Michael Andrew Lortz, 77, Paradise Valley, Arizona. Norman L. Marley, 91, Phoenix, Arizona. Leona McLeod, 92, Gilbert, Arizona. Carl McPhee, 39, Scottsdale, Arizona. Marion Nussbaum, 84. John William Phillips, 65, Phoenix, Arizona. John Michael Rittock, 85, Peoria, Arizona. Jenny Scarfo, 83. Margaret Abayeta Cerna, Phoenix, Arizona. William L. Cerna, 71, Phoenix, Arizona. L. Stevenson. Lute Thompson, 102, Phoenix, Arizona. Elkuin Clyde Wilkes, 99, Scottsdale, Arizona. Marie A. Ybarra, 83. Those are the death notices from Sunday, January 19th. Okay, we go to the business pages and we have our weekly feature with Harvey Mackey. His article today is titled, The Power of Connection. Charlie Brown's young friend Linus made the mistake of confessing to his big sister Lucy that he wanted to be a doctor when he grew up. Lucy was astounded at her brother's declaration and said, "You? A doctor? That's a laugh. You could never be a doctor. You know why? Because you don't love humankind." Young Linus immediately responded, "I do love humankind. It's people I can't stand." Linus was expressing a feeling shared by many. The difficulty and challenge comes in developing one-to-one relationships. Unfortunately, if we don't cultivate our relationships, we'll feel alone and stressed, which breaks down our health. Harvard recently released a research project study, the longest in-depth study of physical and mental well-being among adults. It began in 1938 with 724 participants, 268 Harvard College sophomores, and 456 young adults from Boston. It followed the first generation of participants through their adult lives, from teenage years all the way to age 80, and included 1,300 descendants from the original participants. The key conclusion was that having close connections with spouses, family, friends, and social circle makes people happy and healthy. Turns out that the emotional stimulation of meaningful relationships is a prescription for better emotional, mental, and physical health. People truly crave connection. In today's polarized and politically charged world, this need for connection is more urgent than ever. The world doesn't just need love, sweet love, as the 70s song suggests. What we need now is a profound, transformative connection that transcends surface-level interactions and unites us in a more meaningful way. The idea is at the heart of Joe Sweeney's new book, The Power of Connection. Sweeney is a New York Times bestselling author, an executive coach, and a top speaker. In the book, Sweeney introduces a simple yet profound three-part mantra. Connect more deeply with your truest self. Connect with others and connect with a power greater than yourself. Call it God, the universe, or something divine. These connections are not luxuries. They are essential to living a fulfilled and purpose-driven life. Sweeney says, if we take a closer look at our society today, we'll see a culture plagued by addiction in many forms, whether it's substances, technology, or the constant need for validation. The opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it is connection. People turn to these destructive habits not because they're weak, but because they feel disconnected from themselves, their loved ones, and their communities. He added, what unites us is far more powerful than what divides us, but we have to be willing to take the first step toward deeper connection. St. Francis of Assisi said it best, it is in giving that we receive. This wisdom reminds us that connection is not about taking or winning. It is about serving and sharing. Imagine if this mindset were embraced by our leaders, who often seem more focused on self-preservation and winning than on building bridges. Genuine connection requires vulnerability, humility, and a willingness to see the humanity in others, even those with whom we disagree. So how do we begin to build these connections, especially in such a fragmented world? Here are a few principles from Sweeney's book that, if practiced and adopted, could transform our communities, workplaces, and political arenas. Number one is release control. Let go of the idea that you need to be right, in charge, or always in control. Connection thrives in humility, not dominance. Two, listen with intention. True connection begins with genuine listening. Instead of waiting for your turn to speak, seek to understand the other person's perspective fully. Three, give more than you take. Whether it's your time, energy, or attention, giving opens the door to meaningful relationships. Number four, embrace vulnerability. Acknowledging your own imperfections makes you more relatable and human, creating space for authentic connections. Five, find a higher purpose, whether through faith, meditation, or service. Connecting to something greater than yourself fosters a sense of belonging and gratitude. We all need each other. Two cows grazing in a pasture saw a milk truck pass. On the side of the truck were the words, pasteurized, homogenized, standardized, vitamin A added. One cow sighed and said to the other, makes you feel sort of inadequate, doesn't it? We too are inadequate without quality, cooperative relationships. People are the supplement that makes our life better. All right, here is Mackey's moral. As the world changes, one thing will remain constant: the connections you develop over a lifetime. All right, that article from Harvey Mackey was titled The Power of Connection. Our next weekly feature is from Ken Colburn. His article today is titled Alternatives to TikTok If the Platform is Banned. And that's the question. What are my options if TikTok shuts down? Here's the answer. TikTok, with its addictive algorithm, has become a cultural phenomenon and for many a livelihood. Whether you're a casual user or a dedicated creator, the possibility of TikTok shutting down in the U.S. raises the question, what's next? It may seem like the end of something unique, but platforms come and go, and the essence of what makes TikTok special, creativity, connection, and community, extends past the app. There are alternatives to consider for both users and creators if the network does shut down. All right, for TikTok users, if you love TikTok for its short, engaging videos, other platforms can provide a somewhat similar experience. Instagram Reels, YouTube Shorts, and Facebook Reels all offer comparable continuous short-form videos. These platforms are well established and have a huge number of creators who have been publishing content for years. Popular TikTok creators are likely to already have a presence on these large networks, so start by searching for your favorite creators on them. There are smaller networks that could become more popular, such as Triller and Clapper, but they're far from the real TikTok experience as of right now. All right, tailor your content feed. One of TikTok's standout features is its algorithm, which tailors content to your interest. To replicate this experience on other platforms, engage with videos you enjoy by liking, commenting, and sharing, which also rewards your favorite creators. Over time, these platforms will learn your preferences and deliver short-form content. All right, for TikTok creators. As a creator, relying on a single platform is too risky. Establishing a presence on Instagram Reels, YouTube Shorts, Facebook Reels, or even LinkedIn if your content aligns with professional interests is a safe bet for the future. All right, own your audience. A valuable lesson to learn from this disruption is that you need to have direct access to your audience. Create an email list or personal website to serve as a central hub for your content. Use social media to funnel followers to these platforms, ensuring you retain control over your audience no matter what happens to any specific platform. Next, we have repurpose your content. Don't let your TikTok content go to waste. Tools like Capwing, SnapTik, and SaveTok allow you to download videos and remove watermarks, making what you've already created usable on other platforms. All right, US-based alternatives to TikTok. The large number of TikTok users that have migrated to RedNote did not do their homework. RedNote is another Chinese-owned platform that is even more connected to the Chinese government and would face the same fate if it becomes popular with U.S. users. Emerging U.S.-owned platforms like Triller and Clapper provide TikTok-like functionality and have a better chance of longevity if they become popular. Here are some current differences that could dramatically change if they start attracting TikTok users. Triller. Known for its focus on music videos and entertainment, it currently emphasizes partnerships with major artists and curated content. Unlike TikTok's robust algorithm, Triller users often need to manually choose videos or creators to follow. That gives you more control, but less of TikTok's instant content discovery magic. Clapper, positioned as a platform for authentic and community-focused content, Clapper operates more like a grassroots version of TikTok. It doesn't rely heavily on algorithms, which can make it feel more organic but less polished. Clapper also includes monetization features for creators, such as subscriptions and tips, making it appealing for small-scale creators looking for closer audience engagement. All right, that article from TikTok, about TikTok, excuse me, by Ken Colburn was titled Alternatives to TikTok If the Platform is Banned. Our next article from the Business Pages is titled Part-Timers Struggle to Find Full-Time Work. This is by Paul Davisons from the USA Today. Since graduating from college a year ago, Caitlin Dwyer has sent out about 500 job applications, but so far has come up empty in her search for a full-time position. Dwyer, who lives in Roanoke, Virginia, has sought jobs as a library assistant, office manager, and technical or advertising copywriter, among others. Although she has notched about 45 interviews, she's typically competing against 100 or so other applicants, many of whom have more experience in the industry. "It doesn't matter what sort of field you're trying to get into," said Dwyer, who earned a creative writing degree from the University of Iowa, but previously worked as an office manager for 5 years. "It's very, very difficult." So instead, Dwyer, 27, is working part-time as a library assistant and living with her parents. "It's very disheartening," she said. "A year is really a long time to not be able to get employment." A growing number of Americans who want to work full-time are settling for part-time roles in another sign that a labor market that was sizzling just a couple of years ago has cooled substantially. "It's gotten much tougher for job seekers," said economist Dante D'Antonio of Moody's Analytics. On the surface, the job market looks surprisingly sturdy despite still elevated inflation and interest rates. The unemployment rate was a historically low 4.2% in November, and employers added a healthy average of 175,000 jobs a month from September through November, and 180,000 the first 11 months of 2024. Employers added 256,000 jobs in December, the Labor Department reported January 10th. The unemployment rate fell to 4.1%. Overall, employers added 2.2 million jobs in 2024, or an average of 186,000 a month. That's down from 3 million, or an average of 251,000 a month in 2023, but still a surprisingly strong showing. But beneath the shiny figures are hints of distress. In November, there were about 4.5 million part-time workers who preferred full-time jobs, up from 4 million a year earlier, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The ranks of Americans toiling part-time because their hours were cut back, and those who could only find part-time jobs, both rose by double-digit percentages. Historically, the tally of so-called involuntary part-time workers is still fairly low, and the increase at least partly reflects the labor market's return to normal after the post-pandemic hiring frenzy known as the Great Resignation, said Brad Hirschbein, senior economist at the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. Also, the number of involuntary part-timers fell by 373,000 in the most recent three-month period. Yet monthly changes can be volatile. November's 4.5 million grudging part-timers was more than 200,000 above the pre-COVID-19 average in late 2019. From September through November, an average 2.8% of all employed Americans worked part-time because they couldn't find full-time jobs, up from 2.7% during the same 3 months in 2019, a measure that better accounts for labor force growth. Dwyer earns $16 an hour and works 12 to 15 hours a week, enough to cover gas, groceries, and an occasional dinner out with friends. She's added she's fortunate she lives with her parents and doesn't face housing and utility costs. I would like a full-time job so that rather than living paycheck to paycheck, I can make enough to have money to put away for emergencies and rent an apartment, she said. Dwyer added that she has health issues, and if she got a second part-time job, she would lose her Medicaid payments because her income would exceed the poverty threshold. That's not the only signal the job market is softening. The number of monthly hires has hovered near the lowest mark since 2016. The average number of applicants for a job opening on LinkedIn jumped to 2.5 this past fall from about 1.5 in 2022, the social media site said. What's going on? Businesses are still grappling with hefty labor expenses after they hiked wages in response to the post-pandemic worker shortages, as well as high borrowing costs due to the Federal Reserve's sharp interest rate hikes to fight inflation, D'Antonio said. Meanwhile, he said, sales are flat or rising modestly after a post-COVID-19 burst, squeezing company profits. Also, employers scrambled to bring on so many workers during the labor crunch of 2021 to 2023 that they have less need to hire lots of employees now, Hirschbein said. All right, that article from today's Business Pages was titled Part-Timers Struggle to Find Full-Time Work. And that article was written by Paul Davidson. All right, we go to sports, and from the front page, the main article is an article titled Suns Face Cavs as Part of the MLK Day Schedule. This is by Dwayne Rankin from the Arizona Republic and the USA Today Network. Phoenix Suns will play on Martin Luther King Jr. Day against the Cleveland Cavaliers as part of their 5-game road trip at 1:30 p.m. Phoenix time Monday at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. Players will wear special Honor King shooting shirts in recognition of MLK Day. The Suns-Cav matchup is part of an 8-game slate on the national holiday honoring the 1964 Nobel Peace Prize winner for his non-violent fight against racial inequality. King was assassinated April 4, 1968 at the former Lorraine Motel in Memphis. NBA TV is televising the first game on MLK Day, Dallas Mavericks at Charlotte Hornets at 10 a.m. TNT will follow with a doubleheader, Minnesota Timberwolves at Memphis Grizzlies at 12:30 and Boston Celtics at Golden State Warriors at 3 p.m. The Grizzlies will host an MLK Day matchup in Memphis for a 23rd straight year. TNT will have special pregame coverage beginning at 11:30 a.m. Here is the complete NBA on MLK 2025 schedule. Dallas Mavericks at Charlotte Hornets, 10 a.m. Detroit Pistons at Houston Rockets, noon. Minnesota Timberwolves at Memphis Grizzlies, 12:30 p.m. Atlanta Hawks at New York Knicks, 1 p.m. Phoenix Suns at Cleveland Cavaliers, 1:30 p.m. Boston Celtics at Golden State Warriors, 3 p.m. Utah Jazz at New Orleans Pelicans, 6 p.m. Chicago Bulls at Los Angeles Clippers, 8:30 p.m. The Cavaliers are honoring Dr. King with several game day activities in their matchup against the Suns, who last played in the national holiday in 2023 at Memphis. MLK Day is observed on the third Monday in January every year. Grammy-nominated singer Michelle Brooks Thompson will be performing the national anthem. Brooks Thompson was a finalist for NBC's The Voice in 2012 and was later crowned as the 2017 Super Top Dog winner of Amateur Night at the Apollo Theater, winning $20,000. Performance painter David Garibaldi is scheduled to deliver a special halftime performance in which he uses painting Dr. King's forgettable I Have a Dream speech and entertainment to transform an empty canvas into a work of art dedicated to the civil rights leader. King delivered the powerful speech August 28, 1963 on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington during the March on Washington. There will be I Have a Dream sign-making stations and tattoos throughout the arena concourse, and MLK-themed digital frame phone booth in the atrium for fans. FISLL, and that stands for Faith, Integrity, Sacrifice, Leadership, Legacy, will introduce its new clothing series, The Dream Collection, at the Center Court Team Shop and Cavs.com/shop. Former NBA player Allen Houston is the founder of FISLL. A portion of the proceeds will go towards STLF, which is Spread the Love Foundation, which is founded by Anthony Crazy Bone Henderson of Bone Thugs and Harmony, a hip-hop group out of Cleveland. STLF advocates for urban arts and cultural equality and cultural equity in Cleveland, focusing on providing music industry education and offering workplace development programs for disadvantaged populations. There will be a 50-50 raffle with a portion of the proceeds going toward the Do It for James Foundation. Honoring Tim and Tamia's sons, James Woods, DIFJF is a nonprofit organization that works with communities to increase awareness, provide support and education to parents and children on crime against students, while also supplying a wide range of assistance for those in need. James Woods was a high school senior from Streetsboro, Ohio, when he died by suicide in November 2022 after being targeted in a sextortion scheme. The Cavs plan to recognize Tyran Stallings, founder of the DAD initiative, as the GIF DIFF maker, the GIF DIF maker of the game. The franchise honors organizations that improve the lives of young people. The Directing Adolescent Development, that's DAD initiative, serves thousands as it engages students, families, and community members in programs spanning from technological education to workforce development. The initiative provides mentorship, education workshops, 21st century skills development courses, summer enrichment programs, community health events, and workforce development training. All right, that article from the Sports Front Pages today was titled Suns Face Cavs as Part of MLK Day Schedule, and that was by Dwayne Rankin. All right, from the news in brief, it says Steelers stiff-arm Bears pursuit of head coach Tomlin. The Pittsburgh Steelers rebuffed the Chicago Bears' attempt to discuss a potential trade for longtime head coach Mike Tomlin, ESP reported Saturday. At least one other team also explored trying to acquire Tomlin, only to be informed that he has a no-trade clause in his contract, per the report. Tomlin, 52, signed a three-year extension last June and confirmed earlier this week that he intends to be on the Steelers' sideline for a 19th season in 2025. Save your time, Tomlin said Tuesday when asked about reports that teams are kicking the tires on acquiring him this offseason. Currently the NFL's longest tenured coach, Tomlin has compiled a 183, 107, and 2 record since taking over in 2007. The Steelers won the Super Bowl in his second season, but haven't won a playoff game since 2016. All right, that's today's news in brief. All right, we're a little bit past the midway point of today's reading of the Arizona Republic for Monday, January 20th. I want to remind you, you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. And remember, if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info and audio/on demand. And you can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. All right, to get started in our last half hour, we'll go to an article titled High Court Dealt Biden Series of Defeats. This is by John Kruzel. During his 4 years as president, Democrat Joe Biden experienced a sustained series of defeats at the Supreme Court, whose ascendant conservative majority blew holes in his agenda and dashed precedents long cherished by American liberals. Despite the Biden administration's efforts to preserve it, the court, which has 6 conservative justices and 3 liberals, in 2022 overturned the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade decision that had recognized a constitutional right to abortion. The court in 2023 rejected race-conscious admission policies defended by his administration that long had been used by colleges and universities to increase their numbers of Black, Hispanic, and other minority students. In 2022, it expanded gun rights, rejecting his administration's position. And similarly, in 2024, it invalidated a federal ban on bump stock devices that enable semi-automatic weapons to fire rapidly. The justices blocked Biden's $430 billion student loan relief plan in 2023. They also limited the Environmental Protection Agency's reach as part of a series of rulings curbing the power of federal regulatory agencies. I think it is the toughest series of defeats since Franklin Roosevelt in the 1930s had many New Deal programs declared unconstitutional, said Erwin Chemerinsky, dean of the University of California, Berkeley Law School, referring to another conservative court that frustrated a Democratic president. John Yoo, who served as a Justice Department lawyer under Republican former President George W. Bush, said Biden experienced an amazing number of defeats in his biggest cases as president. Biden began his presidency 3 months after the Senate confirmed his Republican predecessor, Donald Trump's 3rd appointee to the court, Justice Amy Coney Barrett, creating a 6-3 conservative majority. Trump in his first term also appointed Justices Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh to lifetime posts on the court, alongside fellow conservative John Roberts, Clarence Thomas, and Samuel Alito. Biden appointed just a single justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson, became the first Black woman to serve on the court. Because Jackson replaced a retiring fellow liberal justice, Stephen Breyer, her confirmation did not change the court's ideological breakdown. Biden's presidency ends Monday with Trump's inauguration for a second term. Biden's painful record in major cases was to be expected, Chemerinsky said, thanks to the ideological differences between the Supreme Court's majority and the Biden administration. Biden expressed frustration after some of his most searing defeats, at one point describing the top U.S. judicial body as not a normal court. In his last year in office, Biden proposed major changes, including term limits of 18 years, and binding and enforceable ethics rules. In making the proposal, Biden said that extreme opinions that the Supreme Court has handed down have undermined long-established civil rights principles and protections. His proposal went nowhere, giving opposition by Republicans in Congress. All right, recipe for defeat. You said Biden's administration failed to adapt when the court made it clear it would interpret the Constitution using methods favored by conservatives based on the document's original understanding, history, and tradition. Conservatives have waged what is sometimes called a war on the administrative state, aiming to rein in federal agencies that regulate many aspects of American businesses and life, and have found a receptive audience with this court, as Biden learned in several high-profile cases. Presidents, particularly Democratic ones in recent decades, increasingly have relied upon federal regulatory agencies to advance their policy goals due to the decreasing productivity of a Congress often deadlocked along partisan lines. During Biden's term, the court formalized a conservative legal principle called the Major Questions Doctrine that gives judges broad discretion to invalidate executive agency actions of vast economic and political significance, unless it is deemed that Congress clearly authorized them. The court invoked the doctrine to block the student debt relief plan that Biden had promised as a candidate in 2020 and to roll back the EPA's authority to regulate pollution from power plants. The environmental law and student loan cases show how disdainful the court is of Democratic executive action, precisely because the lack of congressional movement means that executive action remains the only avenue for any kind of policy progress in the U.S., said Cornell Law School professor Gautam Hans. In another blow to federal regulatory power, the court in 2024 overturned a landmark 1984 precedent that had given deference to federal agencies in interpreting laws they administer, again, ruling against Biden's administration. This doctrine, known as Chevron deference, had been long opposed by conservatives and business interests. Biden did secure some wins. In their last ruling during his presidency, the justices upheld on Friday a law signed by Biden requiring the app TikTok to be sold by its Chinese parent company or be banned in the U.S. The court in 2024 upheld a federal law that Biden's administration defended that makes it a crime for people under domestic violence restraining orders to have guns. It also preserved the funding structure of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, an agency created under Democratic-backed 2010 legislation. Okay, next we have Trump immunity. Even as Biden often experienced disappointment at the court, Trump, while out of office, racked up victories, particularly in three cases decided last year. In the biggest of those, the court embraced Trump's request for immunity after he was indicted on federal criminal charges involving his efforts to undo his 2020 election loss to Biden, the first time the court has recognized any degree of presidential immunity from prosecution. The ruling stated that former presidents have broad immunity for official acts taken in office. Biden called it a dangerous precedent. University of Illinois Chicago Law Professor Steve Schwinn said the Biden administration found itself in the middle of longer-term trends in which the court has curtailed the power of federal agency and enhanced the power of the presidency. All right, that article was titled High Court Dealt Biden Series of Defeats, and that article was by John Cruzell. Next up, we have an article titled Supreme Court Takes Up LGBTQ Plus Book Debate. This is by Maureen Gropp. an alphabet primer about children chasing their dog through a pride parade is now on the reading list for the Supreme Court. The court on Friday agreed to decide whether Maryland parents who object to Pride and Puppy and a handful of other books with LGBTQ plus characters should be able to get their children excused from the classroom when the reading materials are being used in the Montgomery County Public Schools. Lawyers for a group of parents from different religious backgrounds who are asking for an opt-out said their only other choice is to send their kids to private school or to opt for homeschooling. The books were introduced in the Montgomery County Public Schools at the start of the 2022-23 school year as part of an ongoing effort to reflect the diversity of the community. Previous additions to the curriculum included a book about an Asian American immigrant family and one recounting the life of civil rights icon John Lewis. In addition to helping students explore sentence structure, word choice, and style, the storybook supports students' ability to empathize, connect, and collaborate with peers and encourage respect for all. Lawyers for the school district told the Supreme Court. The main character of Born Ready, the true story of a boy named Penelope, is a transgender boy. Another book, Prince and Knight, features a romance between two male characters. After various teachers, administrators, and parents raised concerns about the efficacy and age appropriateness of the books, the school system initially allowed students to be excused when the books were read in class. But officials said they had to discontinue that because the growing number of opt-out requests created other problems, such as high absenteeism and the difficulty of administering the opt-outs. Represented by the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, a group of parents sued. They've asked the federal courts to force schools to give them temporary opt-outs while they pursue a permanent waiver. But a divided panel of appeals court judges said the parents hadn't shown that they or their children had been coerced to believe or act contrary to their religious views. And simply hearing about others' views does not necessarily exert pressure to believe or act differently than one's religious faith requires, Fourth Circuit Appeals Court Judge G. Stephen A.G. wrote. A.G. said the parents may have a stronger case when the record on how the books are being used is more developed as the litigation continues. But lawyers for the parents said they should not have to wait until too late to protect their children against forced participation in instruction that violates their faith. Under the Fourth Circuit's reasoning, parents cannot be heard until after the damage has been done to their children, lawyers for the parents told the Supreme Court. But there is no unringing that bell. By then, innocence will be lost and beliefs undermined. The case is expected to be argued this spring. All right, that article was titled Supreme Court Takes Up LGBTQ Plus Book Debate, and that was by Maureen Gropp. Next, we go to the best of Clay Thompson. His article today is titled Open Spaces, Dry Air Give Arizona Skies a Wide Horizon. And this is from February 21st, 2015. I hope you can explain something to me. Several years ago, I lived in Ohio, and even when I was standing in a place above the tree line, the horizon looked very narrow. But here in Arizona, the sky seems to go on forever. Why is that? I don't mean to sound snarky, you know, that's not in my nature, but I didn't know you could stand above the tree line in Ohio. Apparently you can. Be that as it may, it is true we are blessed in most of Arizona with big skies, wide horizons. Think about it. For a lot of the year, the humidity levels around here are fairly low, so there isn't much water vapor in the atmosphere to cloud our vision. And as much as we complain about the brown cloud here in the valley, once you get out in the wide open spaces, there isn't all that much pollution. The main thing is that wide open spaces thing. Yes, we have some spectacular mountain ranges in Arizona, but a lot of the state is pancake flat. So once you're out of town and away from the trees and buildings, you can usually see a long, long way. As long as we're on the subject, did you know the portion of the sea where the water meets the sky is called the offing? I didn't know that before. It's a nautical term dating to the late 1700s. It originally meant something far away, but took on the meaning of impending in the offing sometime in the early 1900s. All right, what is the pleasantly sweet smell coming from the desert any time of year, even when it appears nothing is in bloom? Gee, it's hard to say. Despite what you said, I think there are plenty of things in bloom this time of year. The timing leads me to suspect this guy was smelling creosote. Creosote stems and leaves are covered with a waxy substance that includes naphthalene. This waxy stuff protects the plants from ultraviolet rays and helps it hold in water. Moisture activates the waxy coating and produces that wonderful smell. Creosote is a very old plant moving into the Southwest around 11,000 years ago. It came north from Argentina, probably via seeds dropped by migrating birds. All right, that was from the Best of Clay Thompson from February 21st, 2015, and that article was titled Open Spaces, Dry Air Gives Arizona Skies a Wide Horizon. All right, next up we go to today's horoscope. And we'll start with Aries, March 21st, April 19th. Being liked and getting your message across may be at odds today. Ready to let go of other people's opinions? All right, next up, Taurus, April 20th, May 20th. Workplace diplomacy is challenging when rigid opinions come into the mix. Keep an open mind. Gemini, May 21st, June 21st. You want pleasure, but thoughts may get in the way. Watch for shadow perspectives that want to ruin your fun. Cancer, June 22nd, July 22nd. Thrown off balance, words shared in a partnership may unsettle your emotional equilibrium. Leo, July 23rd, August 22nd. Your schedule may get derailed today. Feeling thrown off guard? Pivot your energy when the moon agitates Mercury. Next up, Virgo, August 23rd, September 22nd. Indecision may be a side effect of a self-esteem issue. The moon squaring off with Mercury tests your creative resilience. Libra, September 23rd, October 23rd. Emotions get triggered when a family or home situation pops into your mind. What's at the root of this conflict? Scorpio, October 24th, November 21st. A full plate can trigger anxiety. Looking for an escape route? Balance responsibility with rest. Sagittarius, November 22nd, December 21st. Social life getting in the way of your priorities? It's one or the other when the moon conflicts with Mercury. Capricorn, December 22nd, January 19th. Talking your way into a better position? Charm may or may not work on an authority figure today. Aquarius, January 20th, February 18th. You're yearning for more social freedom, but is a mental limitation holding you back? Investigate your subconscious naysayer. And finally, we have Pisces, February 19th, March 20th. A friend may drop a piece of wisdom that challenges you to change. Are you open to a perspective shift? All right, that is today's horoscopes. And next up, we'll go to Dear Abby. Her article today is titled, Sister Won't Take Calls Following Comment After Mother's Passing. Dear Abby, my sister, brother, and I lost our mom to dementia 6 months ago. We needed to start cleaning out the house. My brother, who lives in assisted living, was unable to help. When I mentioned to my sister that I was going to start cleaning out the kitchen, she told me she didn't want me there alone. I told her when a person offers to help, the polite thing is to say thank you. Well, she hasn't spoken to me in the last 5 months. She and her husband have taken to cleaning out the house on their own. I know my sister has personality disorders. Her doctor told that to my mom from the time Sis was a teen. She won't take my calls. I have apologized 100 times. What now? Sad sister in Arizona. Dear sister, when someone with a personality disorder is also suffering from an emotional stressor such as grief, they are, to put it mildly, not at their best. Did your sister object to you going to the house because she was afraid you would take something without telling her? Did your mother leave a will describing what she wanted you, your sister, and your brother to have in the event of her death? What is supposed to be done with the house and its contents? Because your sister won't accept or answer your calls, seek out a lawyer for guidance. All right, next we have Dear Abby. We recently hosted an event at home, and one couple showed up an hour and a half early. I thought it was incredibly rude. Thankfully, I wasn't in the shower or only partially dressed. I was in the middle of food preparation and house cleaning and too frazzled to say anything. My partner entertained them while I finished preparing for the party, but I had planned on using his help for a few last-minute tasks. These guests have also nicknamed our children, despite our repeatedly politely correcting them. How do we better establish firm boundaries? This is from Seething in the South. Dear Seething, a way to do that would be to tell these people, I hope they aren't relatives, you prefer they not arrive early because you are not prepared to entertain them. If they ignore your request and show up early again, do not let them in. As to their addressing your children by nicknames, in spite of your asking them to refrain, quit asking. Tell them it is offensive, and if it happens again, you will no longer invite them over. All right. Dear readers, today we remember the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who in 1968 was martyred in the cause of civil rights. His words ring as true today as when he first uttered them. Nonviolence is a powerful and just weapon which cuts without wounding and ennobles the man who wields it. It is a sword that heals. All right, that is today's Dear Abby, and that article is titled, Sister Won't Take Calls Following Comments After Mother's Passing. All right, we'll go to today's comics, and we'll start with Beetle Bailey by Greg Bryan and Neil Walker. And we can see Sarge sitting at his desk with a big smile on his face, and he's got a donut in his left hand and a coffee cup in his right hand. And he says, a chocolate-covered donut and a steaming cup of Joe. And he goes, that's what I call a slam dunk. And then he dunks the, looks like he dunks the donut into the coffee, and coffee spills all over his desk. And looks like his partner there says, I call it a mess. All right, that's today's Beetle Bailey. From Pickles, we have a Pickles by Brian Crane. And Opal is about ready to step off the curb, and her husband says, Opal, look out. And he goes, crazy driver. And she goes, gasp. And then we see a car racing by, and he puts his arm around her and said, whoa, that was close, you know. And she goes, Earl, you saved my life. And he looks at her and says, well, cook me a meatloaf and we'll call it even. All right, that's today's Tickles by Brian Crane. Next up, from Baby Blues by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott. Hammy's sister comes up to the parents and says, Caitlin has a really cool bike with gears and a basket. And Mom says, well, Caitlin's dad is very, very, very successful. And then she turns to her husband and goes, no offense, sweetie. And he says, you could have used a, you know, fewer varies. All right, Baby Blues by Rick Kirkman, Jerry Scott. Next up, Blondie by Dean Young and John Marshall. And we have Blondie and Dagwood sitting at, looks like, their table, and the dog's underneath the table. And Dagwood says, I miss the days when fun cartoon art was on cereal boxes. And his wife goes, oh? And he goes, and little marshmallows too. There aren't as many marshmallows as there were either. And he continues, I wouldn't have thought you could be hit with a midlife crisis from a cereal box. All right, that's today's Blondie. Next up, we will go to Peanuts by Charles Schultz. And one of the young ladies coming to someone's door, and one of the young ladies say, Linus can't walk to school with you today. He has a sore throat. And the young lady turns around dejected, and she goes, I can't walk to school alone. That kid whose ruler I borrowed will get me. And she walks over to Snoopy, who's reclining on his doghouse, and says, I don't suppose you would volunteer to protect me. And he's sitting there reclining, looking at the sky, and he goes, don't suppose is a good way of putting it. All right, that's today's Peanuts. All right, next up we'll go to Zits by Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman. And it looks like one of the young men's mom comes and says, I got the job. I'm your new school counselor. And she continues and says, I can't wait to start ruining your life on a whole new level. And then we see the young man driving in a car with one of his buddies, and his buddy says to him, I doubt she used those words. And he goes, with his disgruntled look on his face, well, that was the context. All right, that's today's Zits. All right, that's going to bring us to the close of today's reading of the Arizona Republic for Monday, January 20th. I'm volunteer reader Philip Varellan. Thanks for joining us, and remember to stay tuned for further great programming right here on Sun Sounds of Arizona.